Welcome to Lagniappe, a news feature of KEDM Public Radio with information on issues and events. I'm Bob Lennox. This evening, the University of Louisiana Monroe's Department of Communication and the Speech and Debate Forum host another installment of the Traveling Scholars series. Exploring the visual and rhetorical power of the civil rights sit-ins is the topic. Doctors Rebecca Bridges-Watts from Stetson University, Sean O'Rourke from Furman University, and Leslie Pace with ULM address the issue in tonight's discussion. Welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Leslie, tell us more about the topic, the focus of tonight's event.
Well, previously we've had individual scholars come and talk about their individual research that they're doing, usually related to some sort of rhetorical topic or some sort of performance studies issue. Tonight is a little bit different because it's still a rhetorical orientation, but there's three of us who are doing work on a project that we get to explore together. So we're going to be looking at the sit-ins, the kinds of things that we see happening, the rhetorical impact of those sit-ins, and how we can understand them a little differently when we analyze the images that are involved in the archiving of those events.
Yeah, it should be noted, tonight's event at 6 o'clock in Hemp Hill Hall.
That's right, Hemp Hill 134.
On the ULM campus. Well, Rebecca, you're sharing on a 1964 sit-in, actually a swim-in.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit more about what took place in Florida.
Well, in St. Augustine, you have an interesting sort of conflagration of events because you think of Tallahassee and the civil rights movement. You don't hear as much. You don't see as much studied with St. Augustine. But there was a big Klan presence and John Birch Society presence that combined with some of who the local personalities were in law enforcement and so on, there was this sort of pocket of really entrenched resistance to integration in St. Augustine. So what ended up happening is that the tourism industry, obviously a big part of Florida, and so Martin Luther King and the SCLC, Ralph Abernathy, people like that, they ended up coming and joining with the locals in St. Augustine to try to bring attention to the fact that accommodations, motels, restaurants, and so on needed to be integrated as part of the push and putting the pressure on to pass the Civil Rights Bill in 1964. And so at the point that these swim-ins and wade-ins happen in St. Augustine, the Civil Rights Bill of 64 passed the House, and it was being deliberated on in the Senate. And so some of the people who were there with the SCLC decided that, hey, we're staying at the Monson Motor Lodge. Let's, as white guests, invite some of our African Americans to come swimming with us, purposefully knowing that the media was there at the Monson Motor Lodge for another event sort of around the corner. And the owner manager comes and throws pool acid onto them. And there happened to be a wire photographer there. And so the next thing you know, those images are not just in local newspapers, but they're on the evening news. They're on the Washington headlines.
Yeah. So did that one event there impact future discussions about similar issues or things that were going on?
Well, you know, you talk to some people in St. Augustine, historians and documentary filmmakers, you know, they want to somewhat take credit for passing the 64 Civil Rights Bill because it did happen to pass the Senate right after that. Certainly, St. Augustine wasn't the only place that had swim-ins or wade-ins at the beach, which also occurred after the pool swim-in there. But I think it's the images are particularly powerful because to see these bodies emerge in the water and just sort of all the layers of cultural symbolism that people carry around about being baptized in the waters, and this idea of there were many racist whites who felt that those waters would be impure if African Americans swam with them in the pool or at the ocean. And so to show that also in a very tourist-dominated place that we want to have leisure time, we want to be able to swim and not just be serving you at the hotel restaurant was important for people to see.
Well, Sean, you're addressing an event that took place in Greenville, South Carolina. Tell us about that.
Well, the Greenville Act of Public Protests began really in 1959. And one of the things this project we're all working on is attempting to show is that beginnings are tough to note. So everybody associates the sit-ins with February 1st, 1960. Things started way before that. In Greenville, they were kicked off in 1959 when Jackie Robinson, Hall of Famer, came to town to do a talk to the local NAACP chapter. He was removed from the whites-only waiting room at the airport. So we had a march on January 1st, 1960. Shortly after that, there was a sit-in at the library by high school students, followed by another sit-in later in March in 1960, where there were finally some arrests. So the Greenville sit-ins are important for those reasons, a lot of reasons, in fact. Jesse Jackson was a Greenville native, and he participated later in the sit-ins that summer.
Yeah. You look at the sit-ins, the civil rights issue going on then, but is there a similar dynamic, a common dynamic with what we saw then and what we see now, recent events like, well, Occupy Wall Street or the government shutdown with national parks?
There are some similarities. So protesters are trying to occupy what we might call contested spaces. Wall Street, of course, not being a place where people typically camp. And that occupation of contested spaces is a very important visual image and stimulant, it seems to me, to discussion. But there are also a lot of differences. We live in a much more mediated age and an age where we can be removed from those physical spaces in pretty obvious ways.
Well, Leslie, you're going to be sharing about New Orleans coming up this evening, a sit-in that took place there. Briefly, tell us about that, and how can you find out more about tonight's event?
The New Orleans sit-in that we're going to talk about tonight was the one, it was the first one that took place, and it was on Canal Street at the Old Woolworth. So anyone who is from Louisiana and has made that trip has walked past this historic site. And so we're going to talk about the role of Christian rhetoric that played in the representation of the leader of that particular movement tonight. And then if you need more information before tonight, you're welcome to call me. My number is 342-1165, or you can send me an email at pace@ulm.edu. And then otherwise, we'd be happy to see you at Hemp Hill 134 at 6 o'clock.
Well, Rebecca, Sean, Leslie, thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
You can hear this and other Lanyap podcasts by visiting the Listening Room online at kedm.org.